The themes of World War II propaganda and advertising fit well with the modern calls to action around climate change. Wartime propaganda emphasized collective action, moderate sacrifice, and a unifying determination. It was total war, and every little bit helped.
Adolf, come and get it! Your clam cakes are getting damp!
10-4, Eleanor!
Whew! Defoliating a victory garden certainly works up an appetite.
You sit down, Father, and dig right in.
That's right. This afternoon, I'll be able to start digging the pit. If I can get some work out of that boy of yours, I can have the bunker finished by Election Day. Where is Porgy, anyway?
He's up in his room, helping Porcelain make the bed.
Oh, Porgy! Oh, my!
Porgy! Porgy, tell you about
it! He's coming, Mother!
He's so good with the servants, Fred.
Stop calling me Fred. My name's Adolf.
Oh, bombs away, Dad. Morning, Mom.
Morning, sir.
Oh, hot dog, groat cakes again. Heavy on the 30 weight, Mom.
Don't eat with your hands, son. Use your entrenching tool.
Oh, gee, Dad, I'm just trying to save time. It isn't every day a guy graduates from high school.
How many times have I heard that before?
Well, you boys fight it out among yourselves.
Okay, Mother.
Look at the time. I've got to dress for my bridge club.
But, gee, Mom, isn't that bridge built yet?
No, son. And it won't be until free hands on both sides of the big ditch can press the same button at the same time.
Okay, Dad, I give. Oh, boy, can I eat my breakfast now?
Only if you stay out of trouble, boy. Your shenanigans could cost me this election.
Well, come on, Dad. No Irishman can stop you from getting to be dog killer this time. You're a natural.
Don't wolf your food.
Oh, there's Munhead. Graduation, here I come. So long, Dad. Keep flying.
Oh, that son of mine.
He's not your son, Fred.
Stop torturing me, Ethel.
From the CBC Archives, here's Carry On Canada.
Carry On Canada.
A bit of wartime propaganda that you could easily reimagine as a climate change PSA.
All her people, growing more and more conscious of the dangers to this continent, faces the unknown future with courage in her heart and increasing understanding in her mind. More and more definitely, the attention of the Canadian people is drawn to the true peril in which they stand. And more definitely, burns the flame of our determination to face those dangers and to bear a noble part in bringing them to naught. Serious of purpose, strong in resolution, Canada carries on.
All pulled together through the stormy weather. Carry on, carry on, carry on, carry on.
One of the defining features of World War II propaganda, in radio and posters and leaflets, was an emphasis on little everyday actions you could take to support the overall war effort. Governments and armies and diplomats were doing the big jobs, but in your own life, things like eating less butter or recycling your nylons would help the overall goal. It got around those competing frames of individual versus collective action. The threat is big enough that we're all in this together. So you could imagine a similar thing for climate change. You just need to cast a really nasally guy for the voiceover.
All over the world, our boys are taking it to the forces of climate change.
And you could have all kinds of shots of real-world, ongoing infrastructure projects to do with adaptation to climate change.
In the Sudan, troops are building new dikes to protect against flooding from the White Nile River.
And those newsreels also had little moments of lightness, right? You could have shots of low-key things being done around the world to limit emissions.
How about a little shore leave? In Aruba, the Caribbean's first and only hotel to go carbon neutral is now working to go carbon negative. Ah, a little R&R for our busy forces leading the fight against global warming.
Then things get serious. There's always a scene or two of peace talks somewhere, usually in Paris. So great, throw in some scenes from the Paris Agreement on climate change. You know, big things, small things.
Record global temperatures. I urge all countries to move quickly to join the agreement at the national level.
And then a transition to the home front, and you need some really domestic-sounding music.
You have a job to do, too. See how Dad insists on only eating meat thrice a week? that reduces the carbon emissions from the meat industry. Try warming the planet without those emissions, climate change. Remember, a step towards reducing your emissions is a step towards victory.
And Bob's your uncle. You've got a metaphor-rich climate change PSA.
We, the peoples of the United Nations, determined to save succeeding generations from the scourge of war, which twice in our lifetime has brought untold sorrow to mankind, and to reaffirm faith in the equal rights of men and women, and of nations large and small, and to promote social progress and better standards of life in larger freedom, have resolved to combine our efforts to accomplish these aims.
Ed aims to please, and so does Louise. So don't hide arms, get sidearms at Ames Guns. 30102 East Rhode Island School of Design Terrace in Yucaipa.
Daddy?
We return you now to New York.
Thank you, Canada. This is Observer One, now in the communication center of UN headquarters in New York, where reports from the far-flung fronts are coming in over teletype and radiophone circuits. We're assured by up-to-the-minute dispatches that all is in readiness, and in 7 minutes, we will pick up the launching of operations in the area between the Tigris and Euphrates as dawn breaks in that sector. This will set off a series of attacks on historically depressed areas of the Earth, operations that will go on indefinitely, for years perhaps, in the wake of the powerful impetus of what is done today. The total number of men and machines involved in the enterprise is up in the hundreds of thousands, and the... Excuse me. The principal secretary of the Economic and Social Council is about to make an important announcement. We take you now to Council Chamber 4.
Have you got that report on?
You're on the air, sir.
Good evening. Throughout the planning stages of the Blitz, we of the Economic and Social Council were perfectly aware, as are most of you listeners, that there's by no means unanimity on the method chosen to establish a new era of progress. It was therefore recommended by the Council that on this broadcast, the opponents of this plan be permitted, in the spirit of democratic fair play, to state their case. We've just located and are now able to bring you the president of the World Advancement Federation, whom we pick up now in Finland, where he's on a speaking tour.
Thank you for this gracious gesture in offering the opponents of the Blitz Project chance to be heard on this broadcast. None of us in the Federation wishes to deny anybody the enthusiasm and the hopefulness which have been aroused. But we are deeply concerned lest this enthusiasm be short-lived. Now, after the first exhilaration of this costly adventure, the world be let down. Let me briefly number our four main points. Point one, it is frivolous to stage a mock war in this fashion, since there's no tangible enemy to attack in the sense of a hostile army. Point two, when you suddenly change ancient methods among backward people, shatter their established patterns of living and thinking overnight, certain frustrations are bound to result. Point three, the cost is fantastic. To mention only a few items, $2 billion to inoculate every person in the world against some disease or other, with or without leave. $16 billion for dams, factories, irrigation. $1 billion to build privies for every family in the world that hasn't got one. It's a world-shaking investment without any guarantee of return. Point four. The whole project smacks of sensationalism and dramatics. Since nothing faintly like it has ever been attempted, you have no sure guide of experience, failure may result in a paralyzing discouragement of progress in the future. We believe you are disseminating false hopes, and that from your megalomania, little good can come. That is all. Thank you and good morning.
Thank you for these interesting views. We should like to reply to them briefly in the order in which they were presented. One, the enemy is indeed tangible. Disease is an enemy. It has killed more people than armies. Undeveloped resources are an enemy. As many wars have been fought over needed resources as for any other reason in history. Two, the sudden shattering of established patterns of illness, hunger, and poverty is going to frustrate nobody, except those who make a good living out of illness, hunger, and poverty.
Don't fool your mail. There are no more thank you mass bands. The Messiah returned during the night.
The Messiah?
What does this do with me? Well, you see, men like yourself and Lenny Bruce, you thrive upon the continuance of segregation, violence, and disease. Messiah returns, all is pure. You stand in the bread line.
You mean?
That's right, without polio, sock is a putz.
Three. Yes, the cost is admittedly high. To teach as a small fraction of what it cost to destroy most of the world in the last two wars. However, it's not a question of what it costs, but what is best for man. A sanitation department is unproductive. It never returns a penny. But it isn't very nice to live without one. Besides, economists show that the investment will ultimately pay itself back 500 to 1,000%, some of it even before the work is finished. Four, yes, the plan is sensational. It was intended to capture the imagination of the world, and it has done just that. As in wartime, free peoples have set their minds on a goal, and therefore they'll accomplish things never attempted in the past. We're disseminating seed and knowledge, and from this, magnificent results can come. And may I just add that only to an extremely skeptical acorn does the prospect of a forest of mighty oaks seem megalomaniac. Thank you very much.
Before the beginning, there was this turtle. And the turtle was alone, and he looked around, and he saw his neighbor, which was his mother. And he lay down on top of his neighbor, and behold, she bore him in tears an oak tree, which grew all day, and then fell over like a bridge. And lo, under the bridge there came a catfish, and he was very big, and he was walking, and he was the biggest he had seen. And so were the fiery balls of this fish, one of which is the sun, and the other...
Yes, some uncomplicated peoples still believe this myth. But here, in the technical vastness of the future, we can guess that surely the past was very different.
Now you can hear distinctly the sound of motors. The first rays of the sun are slanting down the valley, and we can make out the task force stretching as far as we can see. It's just beginning to move forward. We transfer you now down to Observer 3, standing on the floor of the valley.
Hello, I hope you can hear me. Can you hear me above the roar of these motors here?
And the whole force, the whole army is moving east, up rising ground, moving at a good clip for this kind of gear. Riding by us now are whole squadrons of cats, bulldozers, half-tracks, tractors, trucks. There's no end of them. The drivers and crews are shouting and laughing and waving their hands, and there's an air of extreme excitement. The tractors are already leaving the formation at the head of the column and fanning out north and south with the object of terracing the lower hills. They know exactly where they're going because every bit of this ground has been studied and mapped by advance units.
Now, Mark, let's go to Landfill, California, where the beautiful rock sand pavement, Dark Star of the Mandatory Entertainment Corps, awaits to talk to you.
I am unbelievably honored to be here at remote Indio Perdido Lake near the bank of the lusty Colorado River, where an earth-moving miracle is taking place as far as the eye can see.
What a piece of asphalt.
Yes, Mark. This is Panorama Land 2000. Where all of civilization is being gathered together on a desert contoured, climate conditioned, and completely re-greened landfill. Wherever you stand, sit or lie in Panorama Land 2000, there will always be something new. As the nation cleans its drawers of the 20th century in preparation for the millennial year of century 2000, it is filling that you should return on the heels of the century. Naturally, it will be exciting to hear what you have to tell, and even more exciting to show your own story here as an example to others. Congratulations, from Panorama Land 2000.
A worldwide production of the Central 2000 Corporation and Walt Dednow Enterprises.
All rights removed.
Now bulldozers are breaking away from the main column and heading for the river, where they'll slash into the low banks of the Tigris to clean out mosquito-breeding bush. I've just had a signal to transfer you to Hill Number 2 on the western side of the valley. Take it away, Hill Number 2.
I'm standing on Hill 2, from which I can see to the north an airfield where planes are taking off to join the procession. They're flying due east over the ground forces, and no doubt you can hear them as they flash past the summit of this hill headed for special targets. There's one near us that has the emblem WHO, W-H-O, on its wings. It's on its way to spray malarial marshes. And just before we came into this circuit, a rain plane took off for the Daiquiri Hill section, where it's going to seed a cloud formation to wet down some of the land that will be cultivated later. Just overhead now is a squadron of photographic planes, making a record of the invasion for the newsreels and the archives. And I understand that one of the first FAO rice planes is over a nearby objective, ready to drop seed. We'll try to contact it for you. Come in, FAO pilot 77.
Roger! I'm flying this plane alone and descending to 20 feet as I approach field 14. There's a hopper under my seat, holding a half ton of rice seed. All I have to do is push a button to start it going and the seed will run out and be scattered by propeller backwash.
How was it out there?
Weird. We've been shooting reds and yellows all day.
Oh boy, am I sleepy.
What about the gooks?
Bad news, Lieutenant. There are gooks all around here.
They live here, Lieutenant. They got women and pigs and gardens and everything.
I was talking to this one little gook.
That's swell, Corporal Kid. But we got orders to surround these little gooks.
That'll be easy, Lieutenant. There's millions of them on all three sides of us.
That means we got those little gooks right where we want them,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and tonight's the planting moon. Several one of them is going to be out waiting in the paddies.
Me too.
Hey, this sounds like a perfect setup.
There are two flagmen standing down there at both ends of the field to guide me, and they're waving at me now as I come in. I'm just about over the first flag now, and here we go. I've tripped the hopper. The rice is streaming out behind, and in the time it takes to tell this, I'm practically at the far end of the field, and I'll have to climb now before turning. At this rate, I can plant a whole acre every 90 seconds, which is a lot faster than the old method. Besides, you don't get your feet wet. That's all from here. Over to you, Control.
Ciao, baby. This is Major Hit in the cockpit of the Enola McLuhan, flagship of the 7th Airborne Peace Corps and Lending Library. We're now over the center of rebel resistance in northern Nigeria and preparing to drop literature.
Do the Bombay door thing. Bombay door swinging and open, baby. Movie and out. Bombardier, it's your karma.
We're almost ready to drop it. I can see the entire rebel force running out of their huts, looking up at the sky.
7, 14, 11, 16, target ready. Hucks away!
There they go. The literature is in a tight pattern. The rebels are beginning to scatter, but it's too late. On target! God, this is an awesome moment. The last stronghold of UNHIP resistance is out of sight. Under 8 million hardbound copies of The Naked Lunch, it's all over. We're coming home.
This is Observer 5 on the bridge of the Olibaki in the middle of the Gulf of Oman. We saw the Einstein pass overhead about an hour ago. Headed north and looking mighty pretty and cool up there. I don't mind telling you, it's hot and humid enough down here to stew a turtle. But when it gets up around 120 degrees this afternoon, we'll just think about the automatic freezing tunnel. It's 50 degrees below zero down there, and the fish get frozen stiffer than a board as they pass through the tunnel on a conveyor belt on their way to storage bins. Up here in the chart room is a radar indicator which locates fish. Just as in war, radar was used to locate submarines. That blip you're hearing is a signal that a school of salmon is ahead of the ship at a distance of, wait a minute, I'll ask.
1,500 meters.
Well, that's about 5,000 feet ahead. This echo ranger and sounder is really very talented. It can identify not only the position, but the kind of fish. Whether it's shark, tuna, or mackerel, or whale. They have seen whales in this gulf, you know. It tells how deep they're running. And you can also figure the speed at which the fish and the ship are approaching each other.
That's sardine here.
What's that?
They say we're chasing sardines, not salmon. No salmon here. Indian oil sardines.
Well, I'm correct. What's coming through on the radar now is a school of Indian oil sardines. Not, as I previously said, salmon. Anyway, it's fish. And it's going to help feed people.
How can you tax the fish? I mean, speaking seriously.
That'd be like taxing the schools, and we've had school taxes.
These fish have been going unpaid in the national rolls for years. Well, maybe we could tax schools of fish, and that way we could just take the old laws and add a fish to them. The old school tax. Yeah, laws. Right. Just right. Pass off on the fish.
We could, however, remove the fish from the ocean.
That's easy. No, it's big, but it's easy.
It's a big job.
My company, gentlemen, has just invented a fish remover, in fact. Yes, Gump's fish remover.
No, is it
big? Well, the prototype model will cost 84 billion World Bank dummy credit write-offs.
How many fish will that eliminate?
Oh, all of them. Every fish will go, but for ecology, your ecology ship,
mm-hmm.
we'll have the, we're going to have all the fish put in polyethylene bags and placed in orbit.
And placed in
Should
orbit.
We ever need
what an
them,
inventive plan.
Yes.
Good idea.
We can always scoop them up. My company, by the way, makes up fish scoopers. Space fish scoopers.
Space fish scoopers.
Well, that's how mm-hmm. it's pronounced. When you get out in space, S's begin to
I see.
It's like a ship going by. The prototype is going to cost you 142 billion World Bank dollars.
It's 142
million. Great. Yeah, do you ever need them again?
247,513 World Bank dummy credits so far.
The ship looks like a huge kitchen utensil. That's the only way I can describe it. It goes out and scoops these bags up and puts mm-hmm. them back down in the ocean. At least two of every kind out there for astrology freaks.
A dream. We awaken rudely. We leave the future behind. We return to a Sunday afternoon in 1949, and nobody is cheering. The longing of the peoples for peace and amity waits outside the armored door of events like a man applying for relief, hat in hand. The Peace Blitz and the World Task Forces are off in the milky distances of the stars. And here on Earth squat hunger and poverty, erosion, disease, and the armed camps. In the Middle East, the Tigris and Euphrates coil sluggishly tonight. No new villages rise. No turbines spin. The marshes breed malaria, and the people are sick. In the deep of Brazil, the giant Amazon slumbers, and the wealth of the continent waits. Between what could be and what is are barbed wire and tank traps, old wounds and new suspicions, hatreds, fear, corruption, ignorance, intolerance, war, threats of war, trouble compounded into trouble, for details of which consult your morning newspaper. But there is also a hope, and more than a hope, and what could be may one day break through and become. At least one part of our Sunday dream is true. All those dams, wind towers, seeding planes, heat pumps, atomic energy, the radar on the fishing boats, the techniques, the manpower, the international agencies, the money, they're all here now. And cooperation has already begun among nations through UN. Could it be then? Could this fantasy, in which peace and cooperation are more exciting to the world than war, could this possibly be? If a man foreseeing the airplane and telephone and atomic bomb 100 years ago had told an audience of sensible, practical citizens,
man, born of earth and water and a touch of fire, custom sodden before his whiskers show, trading sweat and curses and marketable goods, leaping to war at the whisper of a drum, dreaming dreams, yet stoning the prophets who pronounce them. This man will one day fly sturdier than the eagle, farther and faster. He will swim at the side of the whale under whole seas. He will throw his voice instantly across mountains, rivers, and plains, yet speak quietly into a single ear. He will take two pinches of cold metal dancing with atoms and spark them, and a city will crash to earth.
They would have laughed him out of town. Will they laugh now when he says,
man will gather the nations under one roof, and by their acts and counsels, warring shall cease in far places, and the hardship of peoples be eased, and the earth shall prosper, and there shall be goodwill.
Is it possible? Could it be?
When it comes to climate change, love may well be the metaphor we need most, especially scientists.
And I would agree entirely that we as scientists need to be much more in touch with our emotions and also our values, both of those, right? It's helping us to recognize that we all do, surely, in one way or another, love this planet that we call home. And then asking us whether our actions are consistent with that emotion and with the values that should go with, arguably, that emotion. Anything else that we love, we treat with respect, with care, right? We continuously express our concern for its well-being. And it isn't that far a stretch to imagine that we should love this planet and ask those same questions about the consistency of our actions with that emotion and with the respect and the other values that go along with that emotion.
So let's end with one last ad we made up, which takes as its driving metaphor not fear or patriotism, but love. See if it works for you.
The first time I touched you, you took my breath away. I was speechless. You made me feel young and green, as though the birds were singing just for us. With you, I was free. But something's changed. One day you're hot, the next so, so cold. You've turned my heart into a desert. You're not the same, and I don't know if I'll ever get you back.
Losing what you love the most hurts. But we don't have to lose the world forever. Help save the planet from climate change. Protect the things you love.
Now come on, you freaks! Say the word and you'll be free! Say the word and be like me! Say the word I'm thinking of! Have you heard? The word is
love. 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 Love.
Thanks.
Love.
Love.
I don't want to be blue. I just want to be what I want to be.